Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's going on, FPL managers? Welcome to a new video from Fantasy Football Scout. We're talking wildcard. It's game week 7 time. Lots of fixture swings to do to take on board, and Chelsea to target. And who better to join me with this discussion and help me out with my own wildcard team than Late Riser? How are you, buddy?
Doing good, Ted. Doing good. How are things at your end? Are you just telling me you were having a little bit of a chat before we just got on live, and late night decision on a Sunday night. Not a planned wildcard?
No, it wasn't. I've always stressed beforehand that I wanted to keep my wildcard as long as possible. I've said this quite a few times because I wanted to maybe be able to accommodate the Club World Cup with Chelsea in game week 17 and 18 and the African Cup of Nations at the start of next year. But I feel like my team is... there's too many issues and I'm catching up all of the time. I'm still playing catch up, and every time something happens, there's always an injury. And I've made too many bad transfers this season. So I want to try and use this opportunity to rectify those issues and get ahead of the curve in tripling up on Chelsea or whatever might be a good idea. But this is the time. Chelsea have got a great fixture swing. I'm going to look at them mainly. But yes, it was a late night decision last night. And I did have a couple of beers yesterday, so I wondered whether I wake up this morning and regret it. But no, I feel good about the decision. So yeah, not too bad. Are you considering a wild card yourself? Will it be this game week, next game week, or are you going to save it?
No, so I think there's a 99% chance I pull the wild card trigger on Saturday, as soon as the deadline passes. Very close to wildcarding this week as well, but I reckon I want a little more information about City and Chelsea, two teams that I want to dive in on the Game Week 8 wildcard as well. And just keeping it open because it's nice to mull over your decisions over a two-week period, something during the national break as well. And, you know, make yourself insured from international break injuries as well. So that's the thinking why I'm just going a week later.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got the City versus Liverpool game this week, which is not ideal for people wildcarding this week. But I think, you know, loading up on Liverpool and Chelsea players isn't the worst idea. You don't know what that score is. We've had 4-2s, we've had 0-0s, we've had any sort of score lines in those games. So we really don't know what to expect. But a wildcard should be a long-term decision, right? So if you want City and Liverpool assets this week, nothing wrong with that at all. But we will look at my wildcard draft at the end of this video. But beforehand, we're going to look at lots of stats from each of the positions. We're going to look at some fixtures. We're going to look at underperformance, overperformance, that sort of stuff. In essence, to basically give you the best sort of idea about players to bring in on your wildcard if you're doing it this week. Or if you're just making transfers, maybe just to prioritise your own transfers. So let's get on with it. Let's have a look at some of the notable fixtures we've got coming up. Chelsea right at the top there with a beautiful set of five fixtures. Southampton at home, Brentford away, Norwich at home, Newcastle away, and Burnley at home. Norwich and Newcastle particularly appetising for some really poor defensive numbers. So doubling up on Chelsea or even tripling up on Chelsea seems to be the way to go. A lot of Ronaldo to Lukaku moves might be on the cards as well. But other teams that have notable good fixtures, we've got Leeds there. Rafinha owners, you're probably quite happy. Bamford owners are unlucky for the injury, and Ayling seems to be out as well. So Rafinha seems to be the main one there. Arsenal's the other team that we're going to talk about today, who have struggled in their first three games, but have had decent results in their last three, ever since Aaron Ramsdale came in. What do you think about Arsenal just in general, Pranil? Are you looking to bring in any Arsenal assets? This game week?
I'm not this game week. Maybe the next one, because I don't know what is going to happen this game, because I'm sitting with two fit defenders, maybe just one at the moment. So I don't know what's happening. So that will determine the way I lean towards later. But yeah, I think Arsenal are a definite consideration and should be on anybody's wildcard, whether in attack or in that midfield slot as well. Because, you know, people were jumping the gun when it came to judging that team, because the spine of that team was injured. You had Thomas Partey in midfield, who's an important part of Arsenal's defensive setup. You have White and Gabriel, who were injured as well. So I thought it was really unfair to pass a judgment on that team, because half of their first team is injured, right? So, and they've shown in the past three games, and it's just not a very small subset of past three games that they've showed. They showed it in the back end of last season as well, where they can be a solid unit. And actually really, really like the balance of that team against Spurs as well, where they had four proper defenders. They turn into a lopsided three defenders at the back, where Tomiyasu sort of shifts in and they have a 3CB setup, and Tierney pushes on. And two solid midfielders in the pivot, and those three youngsters behind Oba. I like that setup. I think Odegaard is amazing for them. He's one of those players that knows how, kind of like Modric, who knows how to control the tempo of a game. And I think if you're looking at a 4.4, 4.5 million defender, you go Arsenal. I think Ramsdale should be in your thinking as well for that goalkeeper spot. I think it should be between Raya and Ramsdale at the moment, if I'm honest, when you're looking at that goalkeeper spot. And up front, take a pick from ESR and Saka. ESR's been getting, I mentioned it on the wire as well, he's been getting into such good goal-scoring positions. He's just not been finishing them. And yeah, lo and behold, he puts one in the back of the net against Spurs.
It's great to see. It's perfect timing from Saka, actually, to consider him going forwards. I think he'll be a popular pick because of his assurity of starts. I think he's probably the most nailed. That's obviously debatable. But Pepe seems to have really good stats, but he seems to be playing two out of every three games, something like that. So not ideal, but Saka seems to be the one. Smith Rowe is a good price, and so is Odegaard, if you fancy that. But yeah, I like Arsenal. It's amazing how that perception changes so quickly. And I know you were saying about the injuries. So yeah, definitely worth considering Arsenal. We've got Wolves there as well. And we'll talk about Wolves. It's always underperformance, overperformance with Wolves. I'm going to bleat on about it today again. But don't worry, it won't take too much time, because I might be repeating myself. But it's basically about changing the perception of who might be good in that Wolves team. Because I feel like when I brought in Traore to try and piggyback on maybe the expected turnaround in that underperformance, that he might be the one. But Jimenez has scored now. I think the floodgates were open for him. So, and it's still a really good run of fixtures, especially Newcastle at home. I think this is a plum fixture for Jimenez. And I think we've both got him in our thoughts. You already own, don't you, Larizer?
Yeah, I just got him. He was my Bamford replacement. And the only reason I got him is because I trust the player. I like the player. Yeah, he hasn't been looking as sharp. But now the thinking in my head was he's got five games behind him. And I actually quite like the fact that he was so frustrated just through the armband, his headband in that previous game as well. So, I knew I was sort of dead-ending my team in Game Week 8 as well. So I saw that Newcastle home fixture and I took a punt, and so delighted for him, actually, because he's been one of my favorite players in real life as well as to own an FPL, because he always does well for me. Like a Jimenez 8 or 9 pointer was lunch and dinner every day under Nuno. So yeah, happy for him, and I think that confidence, that goal is going to do his confidence a world of good.
It was a really good quality goal, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So I think, as you say, it's going to give him a lot of confidence. I think he's going to be the main beneficiary.
I hope Traore comes back, though, because Podence wasn't really good. In fact, he broke a lot of the attacks against the Saints. I thought they could have had a lot more if it was Trincao or Traore instead of Podence. He wasn't looking very sharp. So I'm expecting that change to happen in the next game week and Wolves to be better.
Yeah, I agree with you there. It's also worth pointing, talking about some other teams here with potentially good fixtures. Southampton have a really good run after game week 7. So they think you've got five really good fixtures. So maybe worth considering the likes of Adam Armstrong, a lot of people own Livramento because he's a really good budget option. Seems to be very attacking, playing in that right back position for Saints. And Saints have been fairly solid defensively, haven't they? The last two on this notable fixtures chart is the Man City and Liverpool, notable because they're playing each other in game week 7, but they're almost fixture-proof to a certain extent, maybe apart from the big games. But Man City have a really good run of 3 fixtures from game week 8 to game week 10, and Liverpool are a bit hit and miss all over the place, but I don't think that's going to discourage anyone from owning Salah or Trent or even Jota, maybe. And we're going to discuss Jota because he's one who I think is super consistent, but he's been unlucky in the last few. With Firmino back, Firmino tends to play in the bigger games, whether that puts Jota's position at risk, because he is currently in my wildcard team, but that could change very quickly. So we'll discuss that a bit later. The other team who I haven't put on this because of their worsening run of fixtures is Man United. And Pranil, big Man United fan, we'll talk about Man United now. They've been having a bit of a Jekyll and Hyde form recently, but Ronaldo, you've said before the stream, still looks really sharp, and you're really impressed with how he's been playing, maybe more so than you actually expected. How does his performance encourage you for the future? How does it affect Greenwood? Rashford coming back, does that give you encouragement for future games?
So the games we have after the next two, I think the next two are Everton and Leicester, and then we have a tough run of games. I think we're going to primarily sit and counter because we don't have a proper defensive midfielder. We've got McTominay and Fred, and neither of them are DMs. So, which is why we sit and we play foreign attack and don't have a controlling midfield. So if I were to wildcard today, I'd probably go with 2 premiums and I'd give Ronaldo a miss, because I think you play the fixtures and then you get Ronaldo in before game week 14 when the fixtures turn better. And even Greenwood, I'm a little worried about, because what happened was in the West Ham game, Ronaldo was really selfish. He could have paid Greenwood in a couple of times and he didn't. And that's exactly what Greenwood did in that game against Aston Villa as well, where he had a few chances to play Bruno in. He had a chance to play Bruno and he had a chance to play Ronaldo, and he was just being very selfish and shooting. So we are a little dysfunctional at the moment, and it will take some time for us to function as a team with Ronaldo as well, because it was a late transfer in, right? So all of the plans, etc., that we've drawn out, it will take time for team chemistry to build in. So I'm happy to let go of my United assets for this tough run of fixtures. If you're on a wildcard at the moment, let the team develop some rhythm together and then you go on and jump on them before that great run of fixtures, game week 15 onwards.
Yeah, I mean, Luke Shaw went down with an injury, came off at 34 minutes, which he's quite a heavily owned asset. People will be looking to sell potentially, or using it as an excuse to sell ahead of their tough run of fixtures, because he's been frustrating to own. Lots of good stats, but he hasn't really delivered those assists. I think he's got one or two, yeah. Potentially. Yeah. But the likes of Greenwood, it really shocked me when I looked after that game. He had some crazy stats in that most recent game. I think if you look on the FPL website, their creativity and threat numbers, I always look for consistency purposes. And he actually scored over 100 in that threat measure for the most recent game, which is absolutely amazing to put that into perspective. So he's clearly really displaying some excellent stats, but I don't think he'd be that popular going forward.
Probably based on the number of shots he took, but you should keep in mind that he took about 7 or 8 shots. They amounted to an XG of under 0.5. So a lot of them were speculative shots from outside the box and in around the box. They weren't really high quality chances. So just wanted to add that context. And I think Shaw being injured is going to be a very important factor in terms of how the game week shapes up, because those that aren't on a wild card, if Shaw remains injured, which we'll find out later in the game week, a lot of people might use their transfer to sell Shaw and buy a Chelsea defender. I'm sure that's where the majority of the traffic is going to go. Is this the reason why people are going to avoid that planned Ronaldo to Lukaku transfer, and what happens with the captaincy then? I think it's going to be a pretty big factor this weekend, I think.
Exactly. This is what I was talking about at the start, with a number of problems to solve. It seems like there's so much that you can do with your teams. Wildcard might not be a bad shout to just deal with it all at the same time. So Let's move on to talk about our first subject, which is goalkeepers. And I think if you are wildcarding, that's the number one spot you need to focus on, because it's the most long-term position. We've got a chart up here, which is my usual chart. It's about goalkeeper ability. We've got number of saves per appearance down the bottom. So further to the right, that goalkeeper's making a lot of saves per appearance. Typically, their defence is leaky enough to allow lots of shots on goal, which is good for goalkeepers because they earn save points. And the XG prevented, which is further to the top, is an indication of that goalkeeper's performance, their ability. How many... We talk about XG on target faced. The shots that they face, how much do they actually prevent? Are they good at keeping out really difficult shots? So the numbers in the bubble, if that top one, which is the XG on target, is higher than the number of goals conceded, which is the one below it, it means that they are preventing more goals than they should be, realistically, which is a really good indication of their ability. So we've got Ramsdale up there and Mendy right at the top there, which is really encouraging, and two really key wildcard targets for Chelsea. It sort of pains me to pay $6 million for a goalkeeper, but with those stats, Mendy could be justifying that price tag. But Ramsdale, equally, 4.5, looks very, very good value. Ben Foster, if you need a $4 million goalkeeper and you think that he's going to keep his place once Backman returns, he seems to be doing much better than Backman in terms of number of saves and XG prevented. So he's not a bad option to have as your $4 million backup, just in case he does have a run of games. But this is more of a balance, this chart. The bottom right is... He's not going to prevent too many goals, but he's a lot of saves. He can earn a lot of save points. You ideally want that goalkeeper in the top right-hand position, but that's just an ideal scenario. So choosing a really decent goalkeeper is part and parcel of the game. Jose Sarr is going to be a popular option for Wolves. He seems to be doing pretty well. The thing that surprises
especially
me...
Especially after that assist.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness me. That owners would be absolutely joyous about that. The thing that surprises me actually is Raya's position here, because he was very good maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago. Maybe it's due to the opposition that he's faced recently. The XG prevented has suffered a little bit. But you're
that
a fan
save
of...
against Jota, it was probably early contender for save of the season.
It was
incredible. Incredible. Such a strong hand as well.
Yeah, so it is a surprise to see him down there. You are a big fan of Raya, and would I be mistaken to suggest that he could be your goalkeeper of choice from game week 8 in your wild card?
So what I have right now is sort of like a watch list that is constantly evolving, and the 4 or 5 keepers that'd be on the watch list or I'd be considering, I think Ramsdale is somebody who would definitely be in there. And the reason is because of not just because of his performances, but if you see him at the back and the sort of camaraderie between him and White and Gabriel and Tomiyasu, they seem to have formed a solid unit, and he's sort of behaving like a leader at the back, you know, for that team. So I don't see him losing his jersey anytime soon. So he's a shot. But if you are the kinds who are not open for taking such a risk, especially with a keeper, because I think it's one transfer later down the line if it goes wrong. And in my opinion, the chances of that going wrong, as in him losing his spot, are lesser than what people think. I think Raya is very, very good as a keeper option, because why I like Raya especially is they kind of remind me like a little bit of Burnley, where the opposition is taking a lot of shots, but they're from outside the box. They don't concede too many big chances. So he's got saves in his pocket, a well-drilled team, and they don't concede too many big chances. So that's my thing for Raya. If you want to go up in price, I think Sa is still a great keeper option. The fixtures for Wolves are not dying down anytime soon until game week 14, 15, 16. I think they're good. And if you want to spend money, then go Mendy. The one wildcard keeper that I'm keeping tabs on still is going to be playing tonight, and that's Guaita. I think Palace have also shown themselves to be a good defensive unit, and Vieira likes to play from the back, so he's going to get a lot of baseline bonus points just because of pass completion as well, which is also the case with Ramsdale. So these are the factors that I'd be considering.
Yeah, absolutely. I really like those picks. The other element to consider here on this chart is the numbers in the bubble. If they are fairly low, it means that they're not really conceding too much XG. And you can see Raya's there is pretty low. So is the likes of Sanchez, Ramsdale, Mendy. Whereas you've got like the likes of Meslier, who makes a lot of saves, but he's conceding a lot of XG, which means that their clean sheet potential is probably not very good. And we've seen that with Leeds. They're pretty leaky.
Especially you don't have a single fit central defender in your team. I think they just have Cooper and then Cresswell, who made his debut this weekend. So yeah, that doesn't help.
Of course, it does make a difference when you have a full fit side. Yeah. And then Meslier becomes a better option. But I think those, the ones you've mentioned, are the key ones for goalkeepers. What's happened to Nick Pope, Pranil? Like, what? He was such a good goalkeeper, and Burnley really haven't changed that much in terms of personnel. What, is he just suffering a low section of form? Or what is it? What do you think?
I think Burnley have just tried to put on a slightly sexier version of football, where I think they become slightly more attacking than they were previously under Daesh, and that's what's led to a slight dip in performance when it comes to the defensive numbers, because defensively the numbers are not so good at the moment, and they used to be a very tight, well-drilled unit, go for the 1-0, 2-0, but I think they're trying to play a little more than they've been used to, which is why I think Pope's numbers have gone down. And also, it doesn't help, he's expensive. I think he's 5.5, if I'm not mistaken. So when you're getting good options, I mean, Sanchez hasn't done anything wrong as a keeper option yet, except for the fact that his ceiling is 6 points. Yeah. And I'm hoping this leads to him getting 10 points tonight, but it's probably not going to happen. But yeah, when you have so many good options at 4.5 or 5 million, why would you spend the extra money for a defense that's not performing? Exactly. I mean, if I was spending 5.5, there's no doubt in my head, I'd go either Mendy or Martinez even, who's such a boss. So yeah.
This is why it's important to consider all of these elements when choosing your goalkeeper, because you've got the likes of Ederson up there in the top left, who has one of the best or the lowest values for XG conceded, and he's the same sort of price as Mendy. But we would go Mendy over Ederson because Mendy's been making more saves and his XG preventers has been better. So Chelsea are more likely to concede more shots, but not necessarily shots that might threaten their clean sheet. So I think Mendy's a better option than Ederson at the same price. But yeah, as you say, the 5.5s from last season, Pope and Martinez haven't been doing as well. So it's interesting to see how that changes. Wonder why that is, but certainly we've got the favourite options here. Sneaky peek, I've got Ramsdale in my wild card, but that I really did debate having Mendy, but I'm just not sure I can spend 6 million on a goalkeeper. I'm not sure. Right, let's move on and talk about defenders. And this is a really key discussion. Alexander-Arnold is not on this chart, but as you can see on the graphic, he is in a league of his own, in a graphic of his own, basically, because he was so far to the right. His XA is 0.51, so much better than everyone else's, that he just made all the formatting look rubbish. So I've created a different graphic for him. You can see his XG per game and his XA per game. Just league of his own. If you don't own him, you know, buy him. He's that good this season. But I think there's a lot of discussion about whether we double up on the Chelsea defence. Do we go for a Man City defender like Cancelo or maybe Laporte or even Diaz? Reece James injury, does that make Azpilicueta an option? So much to discuss. And rotation is a really key factor in this. What do you think of Alonso, late riser? He's currently in my wildcard team. I'm giving lots of spoilers away for my wildcard team, but Alonso is in there. What do you think of Chilwell's threat off the bench?
So, not this weekend, the one before that, we saw that Chelsea performance against Spurs and could not stop thinking about Marcus Alonso. Then I spoke to Zofar, who's my co-host on The Wire, and he's like, yes, he's a great option, but there is a threat of rotation, especially because, you know, they're playing three big games in a period of 8 or 9 days. So probably Chilwell gets one game. Also, I spoke to AK, who's another Chelsea fan as well. And this is something that was mentioned on the Chelsea forums as well. I like to cite opinion in terms of what the fans are thinking. And all of them said that, yes, Alonso's playing really, really well, etc. But we're not far away from a disaster class from Marcus Alonso, where he's prone to mistakes. He's not really a good defender, etc., etc. When he's playing, he's almost Chelsea's second best attacker. So if you have the squad to stomach an Alonso benching, where I think if you're having a Livramento as your fourth defender or a fifth defender, if you're having a Ben White as a defender, somebody reliable and solid to rely on in case he doesn't play, then I think take the gamble. But I've become a little cooler than I was on him last weekend because of his performance against City. It wasn't really good. He lost the ball a few times. He wasn't very good defensively. But the games are not going to be such in the fixture run henceforth. But Chilwell's no mug, right? I mean, he's a seriously good defender and won't be long before he started getting blended into the team. So, yeah, if you want to go for him, make sure that your squad can handle it. But I'm not sure if I'd go for him this week on Wildcard. I'm happy that I have two more games to watch Chelsea and decide.
It's really interesting to see you hearing saying that because I had the exact worry that Tuchel said after the game, we lacked in concentration, we lacked freshness. And that is almost like a prerequisite for making large-scale changes in the next match. Maybe I'm just thinking too much into it, but the likes of Alonso, if he didn't have a good performance, could be at risk there, especially as Chilwell had minutes. Chilwell didn't look that great in the Aston Villa game. So it's a bit of a toss-up. And it's like, do we overthink? Do we try and be smart, or do we just go, Alonso's played the first six games, he's a really good attacking asset, you can see on this chart he's one of the top right assets with Cancelo, do we just buy him, and as you say, if our team can cope with the benchings, then just go for it, because he'll probably play one in two, maybe more than that, two and three,
maybe you think that, no, yeah.
So it's one of those.
The thinking is dead. So you're on wildcard this week. I reckon if you weren't on wildcard this week and you were on wildcard next week, you'd probably just come to the conclusion that it's not worth the headache and I'd much rather go Cancelo and Diaz and go for two City defenders who are going to play majority of the minutes. There's not too much of a worry. So make sure you're not snooking yourself out of that City double defensive double up just because of that Liverpool fixture. That's my advice to you.
I mean, I'm currently on double Chelsea defence with Azpilicueta because I think, it depends on Reece James' injury, the extent of it, because there's talk that he's out for six weeks, which is probably less than six game weeks. But still, that probably makes Azpilicueta a decent option, although his attacking threat is limited to crosses into the box. He does poke up at the back post on corners sometimes and get a little cheeky goal, but he probably is a better asset than he was if he's playing right centre back. And I put a little Twitter poll up on earlier saying who scores the most points in the next six, Cancelo or Azpilicueta. And there was about 1,000 votes on it, and it was pretty 50-50. Azpilicueta's fixtures are much better, and if he's nailed for the five or six of them, then five or six fantastic fixtures compared to Man City, who play Liverpool and Man United in those six, might be a better option. But I think it's 50-50, and it governs who you want as a long-term option after that, probably swings it. Cancelo is definitely one I'm considering, but currently not in my team. I don't know why, though.
It's because of the Liverpool fixture, that's all. It's only because of that fixture. And you need to remember that this is the wildcard that you're setting up for. You're not going to be wildcarding your team at least for the next 15 to 20 game weeks. So I wouldn't have a short-term tunnel vision, especially when you're picking your defenders, because potentially you want to try not picking or changing your defenders or spending transfers there. You want that to be a fairly long-term setup. So I just make sure you're having a long-term thought process in your mind when you're picking your defenders. And I mean, you have two City defenders who played 8 out of 8 games so far. So this is fairly telling.
Exactly. There's always the threat of Zinchenko there, but he doesn't really cut the mustard as much as Cancelo. So I think Cancelo is that versatility that we talked about last season really does add a string to his bow. And Diaz is a decent option. Obviously, he doesn't have much attacking threat compared to the likes of these other premium defenders that we're discussing. But isn't it interesting how we're all talking about going big at the back with maybe 2-3, maybe even 4. Some people are going 4-4-2 or 4-3-3 with plenty of these attacking assets, maybe a Trent, maybe a double Chelsea and a Cancelo. What I would say is that these trends, these bandwagons of focusing attention on a specific position tend to fluctuate throughout the season. So I've thought in my own mind, I need to maintain flexibility on a wild card just in case there's a midfielder who I like the look of and I need to jump on him. If I've got four at the back, it's going to be very difficult to do that, especially for premium defenders. So worth bearing that in mind. Another question about your defence. Sorry, another question about defence in general. In order to accommodate these premium defenders, we're going to have to get some decent budget defenders. The likes of Livramento, I think, is going to be popular. Is there anyone else you can think of who is maybe a decent 4 to 4.2 million option? Duffy, Williams at Norwich?
I wouldn't go there. I'd just spend 0.5 more and stick Ben White in.
You would, even if it... Not like a 3.9 fodder on the third bench. Yeah. You want a full bench of playing players.
Yeah, and you have somebody at 4.5 who's reliable in the long term. So I just stick one more big defender, 4.5 million defender in there in terms of squad flexibility, especially if you want to go for the likes of Alonso. I think these sort of picks who are a good backup option, a solid backup option, are important if you want to go for an Alonso.
Goodness me, yeah, that's a really good point, actually. Currently, I have Livramento and the likes of Williams, but I don't know. I think Livramento is probably enough, though. You'd be really unlucky if both of your... Let's say you had Alonso and Cancelo and they both got rotated that week. That would be pretty unfortunate with Livramento sitting first bench. But I think that was a good discussion about defenders. Let's move on and talk about midfielders and forwards. We've got a chance diagram here, which is all of the four main stats. We've got small chances created on the left-hand side, big chances created on the right, and the yellow and the green are the shots. That's the small chances and the big chances. And we've got Fernandes dominating the stats in the last six game weeks, which is super surprising considering that he might have fallen away a bit since the arrival of Ronaldo, but clearly that isn't the case. Is Fernandes still a decent FPL option? Does he lose penalties? He was clearly on them.
I think he's going to lose penalties now. I'd be very, very surprised to see Ronaldo not take the next one, especially after what happened at the weekend. And what you notice here, though, is that when it comes to shots, Fernandes has small chances that are like shots, right? So they're not big chances. He's 20. But if you see the list of big chances, he's not there, not to be seen. So there are a lot of shots from outside the box because Fernandes is sort of trigger happy, which is why he's featuring there. And he's right up there for creativity because there's a lot of crosses and a lot of passing, and he's great with his creativity. I think he was in the top 2 XA last season as well. So that's always going to be the case with Fernandes. But with Ronaldo in the team, he's not the main man anymore. A bulk of our chances are falling to Ronaldo's head of feet. So if you're going United attack premium, you either go Ronaldo or nobody.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. It's more he's very, very busy in the game. He's creating a lot of chances, shooting a lot, but they're not the best opportunities from an XG perspective, I should say. So that's a good observation. Ronaldo there with five big chances. He's actually played a couple of less games than other people on this chart. So this isn't normalized for per game. So Ronaldo, if you normalize it, he'd probably be a bit further up with the likes of Salah and Antonio, which is super encouraging. Another thing I found really interesting about this was a lot of the mid-price forwards like Saint-Maximin, Antonio, Tony are really bolstering their stats with chances created, and that's not normally usual for forwards. So something to really keep an eye on with Saint-Maximin is seeming to be a legitimate option this year. And Tony
should have had at least two more returns in that game against Watford. I thought his owners were incredibly unlucky. I mean, Newcastle should have scored 3 or 4 in that game.
Yeah, it was. He created a lot. After he was excellent. That through ball to was it Murphy at the end?
Yes, Murphy at the
and
end.
And he missed it with that chip. Yeah. That was dreadful. Yeah. But and did you see Alan Shearer got very animated about that miss on Match of the Day?
Saw that.
But yeah, Saint-Maximin, legitimate option. And this is sort of why I want to move from a 3-5-2 to a 3-4-3, because there seem to be more options for that third striker spot. The likes of Jimenez I really like, but also Tony from the likes of game week 9 or 10, I think he plays Leeds, Newcastle and Norwich in that four of the next five games, which are the three.
And we saw in the game against Liverpool, you actually don't mind an Ivan Tony in the big games as well. Because actually, what's happening is their entire attack is focused towards these two players, Toney and Mbeumo. And they get a lot more space against the bigger teams as well. And they're a very well-drilled unit who gives the ball. The transition is very quick to these two players. And they're both excellent players. Toney is a proper Premier League quality player. So he just seems like a stick and forget in your team as well. You don't need to worry about that spot. You don't need to remove him. He's on pens. He's a great penalty taker. He's going to play 90 minutes every game. He just seems like such a good stick and forget option to me. Proper Premier League player. If you saw, I mean, what really spoke to me about his quality was that offside goal that he scored, where the shot from the far right side, what a finish right into the corner. And I was like, yeah, this guy knows where the back of the net is.
I was so glad to see that yeah. chalked off as a Liverpool yeah. fan. But yes, as you said, it's a quality finish. And yeah, he looks legit and really providing a lot of value at 6.5 or whatever he's fluctuated to.
6.3 at the moment, I think.
Oh, super low. So yeah, could provide value definitely from game week 9 onwards if you want some easier fixtures to target. Another player on the chart is Jota, who I am considering. I just think that he's providing such good value compared to how Mane and Salah are priced. He's 7.7, you know, almost half their price, and he's super consistent with the stats. If you go on the Fantasy Premier League profile and you look at the creativity and threat stats, it's very, very consistent every single game. Yes, he's blanked the last three before last game week, but I think he was unlucky. And I think it's just very difficult to look past. I know Firmino's on the bench. I know there's a threat of him, but I think he still plays 30 minutes if Firmino starts the game. So really legitimate option. Who do you prefer out of Grealish and Jota? Because I think those are a close call on a wild card.
I was actually going to say that I'd be looking at Grealish a lot more closer on the wild card, because a couple of things in my head. I think KDB is fit now. And KDB is going to be playing that right midfield role. He wasn't that great against Chelsea, but he's only going to get naturally better as he gets fitter. And I saw it in the Champions League game, which I pointed out earlier as well, where a lot of the crosses were coming from the right-hand side and they were pinged towards the far post, which is the area that Grealish sort of operates in. So I reckon we're going to see a few KDB to Grealish goals where Grealish is going to be asked to attack the ball from that left-hand side. And it's quite encouraging that Foden is playing the left centre midfield role and not the left midfield role. So it looks like Grealish has very little competition. And I think with every game, he's grown more and more into that City team. And I think he's going to trickle through and offer value at that price point. So I'd probably go Grealish.
He seems to have broken the Pep rotation, the Pep roulette. He's played the first six games. I don't think I can see him being rotated, because maybe Pep just sees him as offering that unique talent that he does. But his stats are very good. Lots of shots on target, 3 big chances I think he's had. So he just misses out in the big chances section on this chart. So there's a lot under the hood, I think, going on. And even though he's only had 2 attacking returns this season, all the underlying stats are really displaying a lot of encouragement for people who maybe want to get on City assets from game week 8. So
I'm really hoping he doesn't go off in the next 2 games before bulk of the people are going to look to wildcard, because I like that Burnley home fixture in 8.
Yeah, it's a really interesting dilemma between Jota and Grealish. As you say, Grealish probably offers or has less rotation risk than Jota, so then maybe that seals it for me. And I think having the likes of maybe 2 Liverpool, 2 City, 2 Chelsea might be a more of a hedging your bet sort of thing rather than eggs in baskets. Jimenez here, really good stats. And we've seen his stats really good over the first 6 game weeks. And he's finally got on the score sheet. I am super, super excited about bringing Jimenez into my team, because I just think the Wolves are going to get back to the normal levels of underperformance, overperformance, and their levels of XG, which is 5th in all of the league, only after Man United, West Ham, City and Liverpool. So they're doing really well. They just can't put the ball in the back of the net. And now I think that he's scored the goal, the floodgates are going to open for him, and we're going to see the Jimenez of old, fingers crossed. And Newcastle at home is a great fixture to start off with. Fingers crossed. But, I mean, I think Jimenez as the third striker, if he doesn't go off on one in the next 2 or 3, you've got a multitude of alternatives in Saint-Maximin, Toney to go off on in the next few weeks. So I think there's a there's like a get out of jail plan, as it were, if Jimenez falters.
I think if you buy him right now, I think you hold till nine at least, because you got that Leeds away fixture in game week nine, and you always fancy your attacker playing against Leeds United. So if you're buying him now, and if you're not wildcarding, I think Newcastle, Aston Villa away, Leeds United away, I think you hold him for a 3-week period and see what happens.
100%. Two of the worst defenses in the league. So definitely hold Jimenez until after game week nine, regardless of what he does. I think that's very shrewd. Anyone else on this chart that stands out? Adam Armstrong, we talked about Saints having a good run of fixtures from game week eight. Does he stand out to you to be offering value? Or do Saints not score enough goals for your liking?
He's a proper enabler. And I think Saints might play differently against a more comparable opposition. But at that price, I think there's, 0.3, 0.4 difference between him and Ivan Toney. I just go Toney. I can't look past Toney at that price.
That's fair enough. I mean, and Brentford have looked really good. Does Vardy... problem with Vardy is that he does it every single... We're never going to own him because he's a rubbish price, isn't he? Yeah. And we're always just going to have Lukaku ahead of him. Or Ronaldo. No one's going to pick him. Can anyone... If anyone's going to pick him, Pranil, surely you would fancy maybe a two or three game week punt if he's got a really good run of fixtures at some point this season.
Yeah, when he... And there is a run a little later. I think the FPL Suite did an excellent thread pointing where there's a good run of fixtures against Newcastle, Leeds United, Burnley, Norwich happening together. So if there is... run of fixtures with such good-looking fixtures, say no to nobody.
Exactly that. Yeah, right. Yeah. Let's move on and talk about
Before we move on, I think we should just acknowledge the fact that Antonio's numbers, they've been like a 10 million, 11 million asset for a while now. And he's excellent and so consistent. It's going to be one of the biggest decisions because the fixture has become a little tough after a couple of game weeks. So do you drop him? Because he looks like scoring every game. Let's be honest about that. And even last season, his non-penalty XG numbers were right up there. Like his stats are comparable to your premiums and big hitters. So maybe some sort of price bias we have there and we just look at him very differently. Very reliable player.
His stats are too good to drop, surely. I mean, we've got to wait for them to fall away a little bit during the difficult fixtures and then maybe we can justify getting rid. But at the moment, he looks fixture proof. There's no way anyone in their right mind is going to preempt getting rid of Antonio just because of some bad fixtures. West Ham are a very decent side nowadays. David Moyes has done a fantastic job and they can probably give it a go against anyone. So yeah, Antonio, he looks so full of confidence. Did you see him in the interview afterwards? He hadn't really had a good game. He scored an excellent goal at the end. And then just spoke like he just knew he was going to score. And that's what you want to see,
myself. And it was a well-taken finish, a really well-taken finish.
He's really improved on his... Really, really improved this season. He's going nowhere from my team. Let's move on and talk about how we got in game week six. And then we'll talk about our bus teams, my wildcard team, and maybe our transfer plans for the coming game week. Let's have a look at your... game week six team, 42, which is a 46 with a -4 taken. Sanchez still to play. Captain Salah, very jealous of that. I think most of us captain Ronaldo. It was heavily backed and he failed. But you wanted more from Salah in that game.
Of course. It wasn't happy viewing, I'll tell you that, because you're chomping at the bit where majority of the crowd as captain Ronaldo, and then you have a chance, you have few chances to make up ground when it comes to captaincy, and I thought this was it. And the reason why I did not go Ronaldo is because of what we spoke earlier, where our team is just Jekyll and Hyde. I don't know if I trust our attack enough. With Mo, he had so many chances. I thought his where Mane played him through, his finish was almost a little arrogant, where in terms of he kind of switched off after, because the goal that he got, it was his 100th career goal for Liverpool as well. So I thought that was sort of like a Mickey off the back, and then he just calmed down, et cetera, as well. Because you expect Salah to put that chance at the back of the net 9 out of 10 times. So yeah, wish he could have gotten at least one more goal out of that game so that, you know, you're getting the rewards for the decision, but at least it didn't black So you have to take that into consideration. I got in Pereira and Jimenez this week. Very happy with Jimenez. Pereira was so close to an assist. And then, unfortunately, Cornet was giving him a very tough time in that defense, which is why he was subbed off after the 45th minute mark. So, yeah, I do have problems in defense at the moment, which I need to sort.
That's a very late riser move there, Pereira. No, I don't think I had even considered him. But a huge upside, potentially. We know what he can do in previous seasons. It's getting a good run out from Leicester. Do you think that Leicester improved? Because they've obviously they won at the weekend, but
it was a win? Draw.
It was a draw. It was 2-2, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
Yeah, Vardy scored 3 goals.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, do you think Leicester improved going forwards?
So I think they are going to be very reliant on the fitness of Johnny Evans, and I think he's going to be very important because what. Soyuncu and Vestergaard, both of them offer are the brute physicality. But they're not the director of the defense, you know, asking somebody to go up, asking somebody to position themselves. That's what Evans and his experience comes into play when it comes to the Leicester defense. And I don't think the performances have been as bad as the numbers, very honestly, when I watch the highlights. They've always been with a good chance to win a game. And it's always been one goal, which is why they've lost. Or, I mean, they should have ideally won last game week as well, where they had two ridiculous offside decisions against them as well. So I think they're going to be better. I think with Evans especially, I think things are looking good. Even Lukman on that right-hand side, 6 million midfielder, somebody to watch out for. I think they've been looking better. I think they're gradually improving. Again, people jumping on Leicester is reminding me of people jumping on Arsenal early season. I think their performances haven't been as bad as the results.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Harvey Barnes has been super unlucky not to get anything. He's had ruled out a couple of goals from offside. Well, obviously, he wouldn't have got any FPL returns, but it just seems like it's not going for him just in all manners. And that will turn around at some point. Yeah. He's still.
If I was a Barnes owner, I would have much less hair than this, right? Because it's been so frustrating. Twice hit the bar, had one big chance in this game as well. So, yeah, terrible for Barnes owners.
It's very frustrating that. He's showing a lot of signs that he's getting in the game. So people may be even tempted to hold him. But it's really frustrating when it doesn't go your way when it should. So that's what it is. What's your view of Benrahma? Because when he scored against Man United, I transfer him out for a hit that game week, which was very frustrating. But it was a fairly fortunate deflection. Do you think that his attacking form has sort of dissipated a little bit, the stats, the underlying metrics? Do you think that he's still a good option going forwards? Because he has a pretty decent fixture in game week 7.
No, it's not. I thought Benrahma owners were unlucky to not get anything out of that Leeds United game. And what I've actually noticed is the understanding between Antonio and Benrahma is actually growing week on week. In that game against Leeds United, they both played into each other at least 3 or 4 times where one could have assisted the other. And I thought that chemistry is only getting better with time. It was telling that when Vlasic came on against Leeds United, it wasn't for Benrahma and he's getting more and more minutes. I think Moyes is trusting that player more and more. So I wouldn't be in any hurry to lose him. That said, if I was on my wildcard now or in game week 8, I'd consider losing him for maybe an Arsenal midfielder.
That's fair enough. Right, let's have a look at your bus team and see how you're shaping up for game week 7. And it's a nice transition of red to blue on this graphic, I quite like, but it was just I lucked into that. So Benrahma, yeah, Brentford at home, it's a decent fixture with Antonio. That Newcastle at home, very mouth-watering game for Jimenez. And you'll even put the vice-captain out arms band on Jimenez, even though you could captain him in that game if you were ballsy enough, which I know that you are. But Ronaldo captain against Everton, is that the clear-cut option for you this week?
I think it's between Ronaldo and Lukaku this week. And I said something controversial on Twitter yesterday where I said I actually think the Everton game suits us a lot more than the Aston Villa game would, because people have this preconceived notion that we struggle against buses. That hasn't been the case since Bruno's been in our team and since Pogba's been fit and playing for us. I think there's enough creativity and I'm expecting Martinez to not. I think we struggle more against teams that press well, like Southampton or Wolves. These are the teams we haven't had good results against this season as well, because we are not a very press resistant team. Our midfielders aren't press resistant. So I think if somebody's coming and planning to just sit. I quite like Ronaldo for that because I think he's going to get the ball a lot. I think there's going to be a lot of crosses going into Ronaldo. And I don't mind that Everton at home fixture. That said, if my defense is looking like it's going to be fit, etc., I'm considering the Ronaldo to Lukaku move because I think a lot of people might overlook that because of Shaw's fitness concerns. And the thing with Southampton is we saw that they are capable of a proper defensive display against Manchester City. That said, in the last 20 minutes when Jimenez bullied those Saints defenders, that just reminded me and made me think about what Lukaku could be doing against them. I don't think it's as far as people think, though. And I think Ronaldo is also a fine captaincy option this weekend.
Yeah, I completely agree. I don't think people need to rush to move Ronaldo to Lukaku immediately. I think when Chelsea play Norwich in game week 9, that's probably the must move. Because Southampton and Brentford are no pushovers, really. But you'd still expect him maybe to get a couple of returns in those games. But maybe you'd expect also Ronaldo to do the same in his matches.
I think also Reece James on that right-hand side is going to be a huge loss for Chelsea as well, because he's excellent with his crossing. And also one thing to say is that the Chelsea midfielders aren't exactly in the best form at the moment, where Mount has been a little off his game, Kai's been a little off his game. So that's also something that's worth thinking about when it comes to factoring the captaincy decision this weekend.
Something makes me wonder about whether Tuchel will change shape against different standard of opposition, whether he continues with five at the back. And with Reece James's injury, maybe he moves to a back four and that maybe forces Alonso out. Because they've been playing five and then maybe three in midfield and then two up top against really decent opposition. That goes to two in midfield and then three up top when they want to play a little bit more expansively. But
I think that's the shift they're going to make. I don't think they'll shift from five at the back. Maybe you have Aspie playing right CB and you have Hudson-Odoi, who's a more attack-minded wing-back on that side instead of James, if at all. But I see them shifting from three holding mids against City, what they played, to going two holding and then three up front with Lukaku, winged by two of Mount, Kai and Werner.
I hope Azpilicueta plays right wing-back because prospect of attacking returns, but you're right. Hudson-Odoi is definitely an alternative option for Tuchel. And Azpilicueta becomes less of a decent option at 6 million if he plays right centre-back. So it's a bit of a dilemma. What are your transfer plans for game week 7? Have you got Luke Shaw to deal with, or are you going to move Ronaldo? Well, presumably not, because you're captaining him. Is it going to be a Luke Shaw move this week?
So if Shaw is fit and if looks like Pereira might play, then I might think of the Ronaldo to Lukaku switch, because you still can't take away the quality gap between the two teams, where Chelsea are good to win 2-0, 3-0 in that game. It's what you'd expect as well. So I don't want to rule out that move. But if Shaw is unfit for game week 7, then I need to find myself a defender. And I don't fancy spending 4 points to shift the armband from Ronaldo to Lukaku.
No, that seems like a negative equity move. But yeah, okay, yeah. Seems pretty straightforward for you. And then wildcard game week 8. That would be a good That would be useful.
Yep.
Right, let's have a look at how I got on game week 6. 46 points, no hits made. It gives me a small green arrow, thank goodness, with Sanchez to play. So hopefully that becomes slightly bigger green arrow. But I'm just in general pretty annoyed with myself in the most recent weeks about the transfers I've made. I feel like they've been poor, not because of the result, but because maybe I haven't really made the right decision initially. And from the way I play the game, I really need stats to be able to help me out. And I always think the first 6 game weeks, you're wandering in the wilderness a little bit without sufficient number to accurately predict who's going to go forward. So I've been struggling a little bit, let's just say that. I've made some bad moves like Traore, him getting benched. Was he injured or was he just benched? But I mean, in either way, it really puts doubt on. I was really hoping that he would overcompensate in the next few weeks for a really huge underperformance. But I think maybe that's
pulled him for Newcastle at home. I think he comes back in. Oh, you're wildcarding. No, then don't hold him.
Yeah, I think if you're not wildcarding and you still own Traore, holding for Newcastle home can't be a bad idea, but there's always going to be a nagging doubt in your mind that potentially he gets benched again. But you said Podence didn't really play that well in the last game. Maybe Traore comes back in, but there's still a little bit of doubt in your mind. So it's an interesting dilemma. I'm removing that dilemma from my mind. Going to just completely get rid of Traore and focus on a different Wolves player in Jimenez instead. Wolves defence in themselves look fairly decent. I think Marcel was also the bad pick, and I only made that choice so I could afford a 2-3 transfer move this game week, which didn't work
out. He got you 6 points. Yeah, he was fine, I thought. I mean, he didn't get you that goal because he had that chance, but you're getting your clean sheet points. I don't think that's too bad.
I think it probably Semedo is the one from that Wolves defence, but he really can't convert either. But when you're watching the game, he's so far forward. The number of shots he has is pretty decent. Number of big chances. Gets a clear line of shot, every line of sight to the goal every single time he's fed through. So if I was doing that move again, I would definitely go Semedo. I think Marcel.
That is the repeatable action, right, Ted? When if a defender is getting into these good positions, you'd rather have a defender who's getting into these good positions and missing. He's not even missing. The shots are getting saved. He's shooting them at the keeper rather than somebody who's not getting these chances. So exactly. In my head, look at the process and you're making good moves. It's okay. It happens. You're at the bad end of variance. And the chart you showed me earlier, it's about to turn to the other side, right? In most cases.
Fingers crossed. Yeah, we can look at that if you want. I wasn't actually going to show it. Where is it? Let's have a look. Bear with me. Yeah, let's go back to that. Because I did a piece of work on this, which was, it's the team variance, which is the XG variance, basically the over and under performance versus their typical level last season. Those black bars in the middle, basically the instances last season, 660 of them. And those instances correspond to how much a team underperformed in their last six and how much they under or overperformed in their next six. Basically forecasting what happens if a team has a huge level of underperformance or overperformance. And this was amalgamating all of those instances from all 20 teams in the Premier League last season. Most of the instances are between -3 and +3, as you would expect. Those are fairly standard levels of under and over performances. With Wolves this season, they are currently at -7 in their last six matches. And you can see right at the top there, it sort of suggests that in their next six, it doesn't necessarily overcompensate, but it does go back to a normal level of under or overperformance. So if, as long as they continue making lots of chances with their XG, it definitely suggests that will return to normal. Obviously, it might be something completely inherent in Wolves players, the fact that they can't convert, they might just be bad at finishing, and therefore this might not apply. But certainly, from all of the different instances last season, it definitely suggests something encouraging for Wolves. And I think Jimenez is the one to focus on for sure. The fact that he has now scored, he's got off the mark and he made an excellent goal. I think he's the one to focus on. But yeah, I've called it buy low, sell high. It's a bit facetious, but it goes with overperformance as well. If a team is massively overperforming, then that's likely to reduce in the next six as well. Something interesting. Unless you're Messi or Son or Greenwood, they're all proven to. And I guess that's it. If a team proves or a player proves over multiple seasons that they can achieve that same level of over or underperformance, then there's no reason to doubt that. Whereas Wolves haven't underperformed massively in previous seasons, even when Traore is playing. So the fact that they're massively underperforming is we can't just come out and say Traore is a bad player because he hasn't really underperformed in previous seasons. His XG might be low, but he hasn't underperformed. So I think this is probably applicable to Wolves this season. We will see. I'm going to target all of my attention from this into Jimenez and hopefully he rewards that. But it's interesting nonetheless. And I think it sort of makes sense from a perspective, that sort of perspective. But let's go back to the teams. And it was my team, wasn't it? 46.
Yep.
So Salah, I didn't captain Salah. I just went for the boring old Ronaldo at home. captaincy, which was in hindsight a mistake. But I've sort of said to myself, I'm not going to try and think creatively with the captain. We'll just try and go the premium player at home in a fairly accessible game and see what happens. We're going to get times where he doesn't score. It's variance. The captaincy decision is the hardest decision in this game from my perspective. It's based on one game week, and you're never going to get it right 100% of the time. If you do, then you're some sort of genius. But yeah, this is a medium term to a long term game, right? So yeah, when you have to hold up, I really like the way that you phrased it before the stream. You phrased it as you use a contextual views about how you think the game will pan out to pick your captain, rather than look at the last six game weeks of stats and look at the opposing defensive solidity and see whether that's actually legit. You thought that it would be a high scoring game, that Liverpool Brentford game, because you thought Brentford would come out and play, and that's a really interesting way of looking at it. And maybe we should treat that captaincy decision in a different way to how we choose to bring in our players for the medium to long term, because it is just completely on a different basis, right?
Correct. And like you mentioned, you try to get this advantage when it's so close, because I think we were splitting hairs last week when we were choosing between Salah, Ronaldo and Antonio. Salah's goal scored offside, Antonio doesn't get a 93rd minute winner, and Ronaldo takes a penalty in the 91st minute, and then that entire story flips, right? So it's variance, right? That can happen any week. Like you mentioned, it's just a very small sample size of one game week. But when the margins are so tight, you try to contextualize, like you say, and try gaining an advantage in terms of predicting how the game might pan out. That's all.
Yeah, no, yeah. It is what it is. But for those who don't think they're good at picking a captain, like me, I always think that I'm not. Just try and keep it simple. Just follow a plan in your head. If you want to captain the same player week after week, then that's the most basic move you can do. Next level is captain a premium option at home to a decent fixture. Just don't overthink it. That's just something that I'm trying to stick to, just to try and keep level, because there were plenty of opportunities last season where I tried to overthink it and I tried to go for a differential captain, and it just doesn't work long term. So just keep it chill, keep it sensible, and just pick the obvious captain each week. And that reduces that variance that we're talking about. I think the time has come to look at my wildcard team, and Pranil is going to critique it, I should say. So we've gone for a 4, no, we haven't gone for a 4, we've gone for a 3-4-3, and that's what I was talking about earlier. That third forward option is something that's super appealing to me, and that Jimenez spot is definitely filled for that third striker position. I've got Saka in there. I think that might be a little knee-jerk, but as we were talking about targeting Arsenal for their good run of fixtures, it seems like a legitimate move. Just to caveat this is a first draft. Definitely not completely set on this by any means. The likes of Cancelo might come into this, like the likes of Grealish instead of Jota. And I think, regardless, I probably won't pick Jota initially. It will be probably Sarr against Leeds, and then I'll move Sarr up to either a Grealish or a Jota in game week 8 to book a transfer in, because I think with that Man City match, not the fact that Jota might be a bad option in that match, but Firmino tends to get the nod in really big fixtures. Not sure on his fitness level, but I think, you know, Jota and Grealish are playing in that same match, so Sarr against Leeds probably is the optimal way. But I think double Chelsea defence is probably the way to go if I don't want to overthink it. But it's that rotation risk that we're talking about with Alonso, whether Azpilicueta plays right centre-back, who knows? I really could go Cancelo, but I do like the likes of Ramsdale as well. So what do you think of this team? Is it fairly similar to what you would go for? What are the holes you think that I'm leaving, and what would you critique about it?
I think it's a good team, first off, for a first draft. I think it's a really good team. Pick at least 9 or 10 of these players in my wildcard draft if I was building it today as well. And I won't really know what I eventually will go into unless you're mulling over the decisions and really you know, debating one position for a couple of hours and then coming to a conclusion. But first off, I don't like that you have Williams in there. I try to find 0.45 million from somewhere to make sure you're upgrading that spot to a playing 4.5 defender. I think that's the first thing I do, especially since you have Alonso in there. I don't like the fact that there's no Manchester City in there, because I think if you were wildcarding in eight, you would have two Manchester City players into your team. And I urge you to have a long-term view when it comes to your wildcard, especially in defense, and try sticking in a couple of Manchester City players in there. One more shout on your watch list, per se. Tierney, I think, is a really good option on the wildcard as well. Should you want to spend a little cheaper, I think double Chelsea or double City defense is a good option. Jota, I think Diego Jota is always a good option as long as one of the other three Liverpool attackers are injured or out for a while. We don't know for sure that he's first choice at the moment. So you're always looking at the Liverpool team sheet. Yeah, he does well off in 30 minutes as well. But even if he's starting, he's getting 60 minutes and you don't want that. So that's something that would worry me about Diego Jota, especially with Firmino being fit. I think, I don't know how much of a difference there is between a Saka and a Smith Rowe. So I think there's a potential to save 0.5 million there and spend it elsewhere in the team. And up front, I like your strikers. The only two that I'd be considering otherwise, should you need more money, is Ivan Toney, like we discussed. He's got a pretty neat run of fixtures game week 9 onwards, if I'm not mistaken. And I'd maybe look at Watkins as well. I think Villa have impressed me in attack. I think they look like a really good team in attack. And Watkins is somebody I'd be monitoring, because I think game week 10 or 11 onwards, they have a good run of fixtures as well.
So, yeah, Villa seem to be flying under the radar a little bit. They've got Spurs and Wolves up next, and Spurs haven't really been doing that well. Arsenal, West Ham, Southampton and Brighton. So a fairly decent run of fixtures, a little bit mixed. But I mean, the likes of... I've got Douglas Luiz at 4.5. He's been impressing the last couple of games in terms of his creativity. Is there anyone else that you think at a 4.5, 4.4 million, that sort of third bench spot or bench spot regardless is better than Douglas Luiz? I know that you like Ramsey from Villa as well.
But he's a little bit of a rotation risk, because once Bailey is back and fit, he's been sensational in his cameo so far for Villa. So I think they will change shape from three at the back to going back to four at the back. So I've been well advised by Tom Freeman, who's a Villa fan, to not go in that direction. The only other, I think Lewis is a fine pick. The only other one I'd consider is a certain trigger happy Mr. Sean Longstaff, who's been taking some shots from outside the box. But I think Lewis is fine as a pick. I wouldn't worry too much about it.
Yeah, exactly. I think, but you're explicit. You want me to get a 4.5 defensive option. The worry I do have about that is, how many times do we realistically have or have the need for our second bench spot? Very, very rarely do we have more than one ever auto subs.
There's one more reason to it, Ted. Let's say Jungmin Son is scoring 3 goals in 3 games and he becomes a real option. Now, what at that time you can do is shift your premium defender to a 4-4.5 million defender, and you're covered with your bench options to then upgrade an attacker to that 10 million spot without having to shift too much in defense. So I think that little bit of insurance also helps if you want to shift money from defense into attack at a later point.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I haven't even considered that. And as you said, you can release that money by maybe going Saka to Smith Rowe. That extra sort of 0.5, 0.6 would be useful. I think probably what I will do in the next tinker is move the likes of Azpilicueta down to Rudiger and have Grealish instead of Jota, and maybe Cancelo instead of Alonso. I'm not 100% sure. I really want to go for attacking defenders, because that's the whole point about going for premium options, right?
Cancelo's attacking.
Yeah, attacking. Rudiger is the boring option though, isn't he? But if it's the money, it's the 0.4, 0.5 that you save by going Rudiger that allows that Jota to Grealish upgrade. So it's definitely something I'll play around with. But I think this is the basis of the wildcard for Game Week 7. Ramsdale's an interesting one. As you say, it could be a transfer waiting to happen.
But I'd go Ramsdale as well if I was wildcarding today.
Arsenal have got really good fixtures, as we talked about earlier on. Another thing that I was considering was going Mendy instead of Ramsdale and having Cancelo instead of Azpilicueta. So you've got double Chelsea, a City and a Liverpool. But it's just the 6 million for Mendy. And the fixtures that Chelsea actually have, they're so good that you're probably not expecting them to test Mendy as much, and therefore he makes less saves, and therefore he just becomes a 6-point ceiling merchant.
With you on that.
Yeah, so it put me off a little bit. And Ramsdale seems to be offering a lot more. Arsenal are going to concede a lot more shots, but still...
And they play out the back as well, so he's getting that pass completion that you want in your keeper, which is taking the chances of bonus points up. Fair goalkeeper as well.
Yeah, interesting. But yeah, there we have it. I think Livramento, I've finally got on board of him. Having Tsimikas in my side really was a prevention for a long time. So I think with a wild card, you're dealing with a number of options. Luke Shaw's injury, the fact that Tsimikas is blocking Jota if I wanted him, that triple Liverpool. And my bench was pretty poor. I wanted Jimenez, I want Lukaku, I want lots of Chelsea players, but loads of fires to fight. And Mason Mount, I brought Mason Mount in last week for him to be injured and had to remove him for Sarr, which was decent, a good move, but best laid plans of mice and men, eh? But there we go. I think that's a fairly decent wild card. I will probably tinker for the next 4 or 5 days, so it's probably likely to change, but there's a good indication of what to expect. If you liked my wild card draft, leave a comment in the comment section, whether you like it, dislike it. Who would you choose? Any other players that I've missed, give me a shout in the comment section and I'll try and respond. But I think we'll leave it there.
We've got about 900,000 people watching us. Make sure you're hitting the like button, guys, because it helps us get found. So just hit that like and subscribe button right now.
900,000 people watching. Yes, that is accurate. I wish.
900 to 1,000 is what I'd say. Yeah.
I wish 900,000. Well, thank you very much for joining me, Pranil. That was a good comprehensive discussion, I think, about game week 6 and looking ahead to game week 7. So look forward to it when it comes around. But best of luck with your transfers, and let me know how you get on with your moves. I'll be catching up on The Wire. Have you got The Wire tomorrow? Are you recording tomorrow? So make sure tomorrow. That you, if you haven't checked out the FPL Wire, if you've been living under a rock, go and subscribe to their channel. You're approaching on 15K and nearly the 20K subscriber limit. So you're growing rapidly, and I really love that stream. So go and check it out if you haven't. But otherwise, thanks again, Pranil, for joining me, and we'll leave it there, mate. I'll catch you soon.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me, Ted.
See you, mate.